Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
We're continuing our
parade of city council experiences. So speaking of city council, maybe we should sort of touch upon that here.
Yeah.
And actually, let's just do one little quick one. So one thing that came back as part of the city council agendas last night was the return back from the state legislature of the approval of the home rule petition,
which would allow them to reconfigure
reconfiguration of Inman Square. And I think the city manager as well as the mayor sort of tried to make clear that for those who have alternative proposals, even if they're good proposals, that they're really not on the table because, well, for a number of reasons.
They were just going to vote on accepting that home rule petition?
Accepting the home rule petition, which does not actually
mean that it has to happen.
Right, but in early October, the city manager made a statement which says that I think it was either something like October 8th, I can't remember for sure, that there would be an appropriation request for approximately $6 million.
That's going to trigger a lot of discussion.
They all made pretty clear that we don't want to hear any alternatives. We don't hear that this is going forward or nothing. So
yeah, that's kind of sad. But
yeah. Well, it's kind of, I mean, I don't want to be too critical about it. But
there were a lot of meetings, and I guess a lot of people were in support of it, yes?
You know, Cambridge used to, I think, correctly get some criticism for processing things to death.
Yeah.
Meaning any idea, including, like, for example, with the expansion or the building of the new main library.
Mm.
Okay, so that I was on that Library 21 committee, and then, you know, so then it got hashed or whatever. So there was actually state funding that we lost because
it
was
would have
so
cost
busy.
$20 million when it first came up, and then it ended up costing
far more.
Yeah.
And also the grant money that was to be available had we been a little
I remember
more quick
that. You're right.
Went away. You know, so yeah, I think it's a problem when we overprocess things.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we seem to be trending the opposite direction, whether it's, I think it was sort of a byproduct of the last council term or two. Like, for example, rather than have a full-blown debate on a particular type of bicycle infrastructure, it was like, no, we got to rush, we got to do it now, and don't ask any questions.
Yeah.
And then
don't tell anybody.
Right, and then afterwards, it was sort of like, okay, now everybody's mad about this and mad about that.
Yeah.
Whereas the old Cambridge would have processed it maybe too much.
Yeah.
And it maybe never happens. So now the opposite. We've gone the other extreme of do everything fast and furious, even if it's bad. And then we'll just sort of deal with the repercussions. By the way, I'm not saying Inman Square configuration that they have is bad. I do think there are some things that could be better. But, you know. But it's just, it seems like it's sort of the way we seem to be doing business now. It's a, like discussions off the table. And I could give you some
spectacular examples. Yeah, but on Inman Square, though, they did have a lot of meetings.
They
claim there was
they can claim it all day
public
long,
meetings
but
and that there were a lot of community people.
But what happened
liked
is that people with the right mailing list packed the meetings and kind of
But it wasn't just, I remember Phyllis Breckhalls, a lot of people lived there, liked it. Maybe they just gave up. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, you know, it's, we'll, who knows. But, so anyway, so that's basically a done deal for all intents and purposes.
Really? You don't think, does the council have any final say about that?
Well, they can vote to appropriate the money or not, and you know they're going to appropriate it because they always appropriate it.
Okay.
So, so I think it's just a done deal. The only thing that's left is basically how are you going to accommodate the businesses? Some of them are going to be put off by construction impacts and whatever, and may even lose some business. I will say one last little thing on configuration without obsessing about this.
Mm-hmm.
Some idiot got up there and talked about last night about how we're going to be, you know, making buses much more efficient, whatever, by having floating bus stops.
Oh, a dedicated bus lane?
But they also mentioned floating bus stops.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Just in case you don't know what a floating bus stop is.
I don't know what that is.
Floating bus stop means that because we want to have the bicycle infrastructure at the curb, we don't want the bus to pull up to the curb, so we're going to ask the bus to stop right in the middle of the travel lane. That's a floating bus stop.
Oh.
So basically, sure. Yeah. Does that make the bus go faster? Maybe it does. And that's because he's backing up the traffic.
But how do the people get on the bus?
They walk out into the street. They walk across the bike
lane.
They hope they don't get whacked. And then they kind of, hopefully the guy lowers the bus and then up you go and whatever.
Oh boy.
You know, personally, I think the whole concept of a quote floating bus stop is ludicrous.
I didn't hear that part.
But hey, they don't listen to me. So hey. That's the way it goes. I mean, that's kind of the traffic and parking is like, the you know.
I wish people, this Ed Wall, every time I hear him speak and I haven't seen the exact plans, it always sounds so much better.
Yeah,
it's a modified plan of what they're.
I mean, doing. I don't want to get too worked up about it, but the thing is that it's starting to get so. Who's got the loudest lobby?
Yeah.
And then the manager says, "Okay, we got to make sure the lobby is satisfied," and it's like it's not great. All right, but that wasn't the only thing that happened at the city council meeting. There were quite a few things. It was a relatively long agenda.
Mainly because of the city manager, there's like 30 items or something?
Yeah, it was mainly things from the manager.
Yeah, because they hadn't met since July 3rd.
That's right. So, and most of the things that you get from the manager are just routine, like expenditures to cover this and that. There were a lot of good appointments, sort of notable appointments. And things, the stack of materials for the meeting was like about that thick.
I was going to say, Did you take one?
I got one on Friday,
Okay.
So, and they had a whole big box of these gigantic things the size of phone books.
Wow.
I don't think they really need to print that many, honestly.
No. I would like the committee reports, because I like those.
Yeah, no, I actually hold on to some, because I like having something paper for some things. But there were certain things. The biggest thing, even though it's totally routine and non-negotiable, was they did the voting of the Community Preservation Act.
Yeah, that was
funding.
Very informative. I hadn't really paid much attention to that.
I mean, I've been
to
going to those since they started doing it. But
why don't you explain exactly what that is?
All right, so the Community Preservation Act. Yes. And what happened was about 2002 or three, around then, or maybe it was even earlier, but I think it was around then, the state passed enabling legislation that enabled towns to vote. To accept this, there was a deal made at the time, which is that Cambridge was spending X amount of dollars on housing programs, and that this was going to be a budget neutral proposal. So in other words, we're going to take that money out of the regular budget. Mm-hmm. We're going to pass a 3% surtax, which will increase, take in more money on top of your
3% surtax on property
on top of
sold?
On top of your property tax.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And then so that the money that would come through CPA from the city taxpayers would match the amount that they reduce the budget for housing programs.
Okay.
So that was kind of the deal, so to sell it that it would be revenue neutral as opposed to a tax increase.
But how long has the Community Preservation Act been in existence?
So that went into effect about 2003.
Oh, 2003. So it's relatively recent, the whole act?
Yeah, but the thing is that there was an understanding even before it went in, that the membership of the CPA committee, which is 9 people, would be stacked by design to strongly favor the maximum amount to go to affordable housing programs.
So people that committee would be representing those programs?
Now, across the state, that's not how it usually works. You have to spend it on open space preservation, historical preservation, open space acquisition, historical preservation, or affordable housing.
Well, that's the mix, but
that's
the percentage
is minimum of 10%
for the historical.
Right. Now, if you go across the state,
I bet it's different.
It's primarily like open space, historical preservation, and a little bit for affordable housing.
Really?
Right? Huh. In Cambridge, 80% affordable housing, 10% historic, and 10% open space. And even in the historic preservation part, sometimes it's for preservation for affordable housing. Push it, right? So that was the deal, right?
Yeah.
Now the truth is that in the early days, the city dollars would be matched by state dollars one for one, because there was this money that was came from, I think, some transfers or filing of deeds, or I forget exactly the deal. But there was a kitty that was established from the state and a source. Now, if Cambridge or maybe one or two other towns were the only towns who were signing on to the Community Preservation Act, they're the only ones that had access to the kitty. So we could get a one-for-one match.
Until everyone else found out about it.
And then more and more cities and towns started signing on to CPA. And then now we get about a 13%, not 100%, a 13% match.
So the state has no regulations about the towns that get it should be doing more affordable housing? They don't care?
It's all stated in the law. It's a minimum of 10% for each of these three, but you get to choose how to allocate it as long as you meet the minimum.
All right, so now we get 13%.
Right, and on top of that, now Cambridge is also throwing more money back into the general budget for affordable housing in addition to the Community Preservation Act. So
it's quite a lot.
It is quite a lot. Now, you know, now there's a lot of discussions we can have about the right ways and wrong ways to do this. But anyway, they passed it. And, you know, years ago, people would actually show up and say, I think you should have more money for open space acquisition. Mm. I think you should have more money for this or that. After a while, the city kept saying 80, 10, 10, and that's that. And nobody even goes anymore. Right.
But last night, they had to vote on exactly where that 10% was going.
Yeah,
21 actions, or 21
22
projects.
22 votes, actually.
22, yeah.
So the thing is that there is, the Community Preservation Act Committee actually meets generally during the summer. Mm-hmm. There are people propose various projects, and they decide in putting the recommendations for what the city council should fund.
Right.
So it's not just the percentages, it's also the specifics.
Right. And
okay,
where
so Magazine Beach got some funds.
Right. So where does that come from? From lobbying, from community groups, from different people presenting
and
this?
And from the Affordable Housing Trust, whatever.
Okay.
It's a little bit of an insider's game, to be perfectly honest.
To know about it. And,
yeah.
You know.
It's just a different way, a different pocket to take the tax money out of, and for all intents and purposes. But it has become the primary source of funding for affordable housing programs that the city does,
yes.
Though not the primary source of affordable housing, which has really been, I think I can fairly say, is the inclusionary zoning that actually produces.
Right, which actually in that document that they sent out on the second page is a whole thing on.
Yeah,
which I still don't understand all of it, but it's,
you know, the biggest
numbers at a glance. So don't throw that out or recycle
it.
Just look at
one of the primary focuses of the Affordable Housing Trust has not just been building new.
Right.
It's also been preserving old, what we call expiring use housing.
Affordable housing preserved or created through city initiatives
since the end of
rent control.
A lot of the numbers in there are actually larger buildings that might have gone and just become market rate.
Right.
But for the fact that there was this intervention to
quite
make
a
it
few.
So.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's what happened. In my recollection, ever since we've been doing CPA, the city council has never deviated from the recommendations at all for individual projects, or even though I believe they have the authority to do so.
They had to take a vote on each one. So.
Right, but it's 9-0. 22 votes, 9-0 each.
Right.
So anyway, that was the biggest business, you know, but it wasn't the only thing that was really going down there as well.
Well, they suspended the rules to bring forward the city managers, the whole thing about Inman and also the...
So they did have to formally accept the home rule petition. So we make a home rule petition to the legislature, they say okay, but then it still has to come back to the city council and then they have to approve it.
So was it approved?
Or accept it. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
It was,
Sure. But then what, right? So now, as we was talking about before, Inman Square reconfiguration will now proceed with the parkland redesignated to another spot. So
that whole thing with the petition and ceremony, that's all gone. There's no discussion.
A petition can sit, it'll sit on the table. It doesn't really have any consequence because in something like this, you can't arbitrarily... In other words, if you wanted to do a reconfiguration, you'd have to file a different home rule petition because of the, you know, I think. Now, I think that's arguable.
I haven't seen the petition plan, whether it actually required reconfiguration.
Right. So,
I don't know.
Anyway, but regardless.
Regardless.
The manager's not going to change it. It's just done. So, you know, live with it and continue to shop at Indian Square businesses. Right. So that was kind of a big deal. There was sort of moving along the process. I don't know that it was passed through a second reading or anything. I forgot because I might have been out of the room at the time. But there was a committee report having to do with cannabis. I think it may still be in committee. I don't think the committee reported out of committee. And that was the... economic development. That would still have to go to ordinance to go forward. But the planning board report did come back and said, it's okay.
Oh, there was discussion about
that. They recommended some changes. So we'll see how that goes. So that's in process. That's one of the zoning petitions that's in process.
Yeah.
The rain, water, and flat roofs petition, which I think was really something Craig Kelly's been pushing.
Yeah.
And a guy named Nikolai Kaushi has been promoting. And this is like, it's not his first time, first pass at it. That's in process. I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm going to tell you, I will say this. I have a triple decker with a flat roof, and because today we were supposed to be getting the remnants of Hurricane Florence coming
flash
through,
flooding,
and we got some big rainfall.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I had to go up the ladder and walk around on my flat roof, my knee was hurting, and I had a problem, but I had no choice. I had to go up there on the roof with a broom just to make sure that the drain was clear, just in case we got a lot of
rainfall. So how would this help you?
I don't think I would take advantage of it, but thing is, if I wanted to reconfigure my roof so it wasn't flat pitching in toward the center, and
you
so that it pitched outward, which would require a little extra height, or you know, building up some other reconfiguration.
You couldn't just do that?
I couldn't just do that as
Why?
A right, because it would violate the height restrictions in the zone that I'm in.
Oh.
So I would have to seek a variance or whatever. So. The purposes of the zoning petition is basically to give people some options.
Okay.
And the thing is that it also kind of goes into the resiliency thing as well, because, you know, this is water that's just going down into the MWRA sewers.
Right.
Right. So if you changed it, it would go off to the property, which might be a problem.
Right.
Or you could redirect some into rain barrels, but honestly, in a big storm, that rain barrel is going to fill up awful quick. There are basically, to me, it's just about giving people a few more options. I don't know what's exactly the right solutions, but I actually think that something should come out of this, I hope.
I can't believe that would raise the height that much that you'd have to get a variance. I mean,
I don't think it would change it that much.
You have to get a permit to do anything on your property, actually.
Well, you know, considering the fact that the city council is seriously going to be discussing a 100% affordable housing overlay, which will give 100% affordable housing developers the right to build to a density up to four times anybody else.
Right.
So if you put it in that perspective, if some homeowner wants to throw in 5 extra feet of height, give me a break.
Yeah, that's right? I'd like to see where that's going to go anyway.
You know, but if it's, unless it's affordable roofs, they're not going to even consider it, I guess, right? So
how many overlay proposals?
Oh,
are there?
My goodness.
There's
artist
one.
You know, overlay
housing, and there's a third one now, isn't there?
Overlay, you know, I'm starting to think that the city council and the city is using overlays of various sorts too much. You know,
well, how does that equate with Envision? And is that connected?
If you call something a citywide overlay, then that's just called changing the zoning for the city.
It's
not an overlay.
Plan.
I just wonder sometimes about the sanity of some of these folks.
Well, we'll have to see how it shakes out with the final Envision report.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I will say that when I went to the Envision meeting on Wednesday
I went with that.
And then on the housing working group, I'm on that as well,
you went
on Thursday.
The next night,
Well, I had to go teach a class, so I could only be there for the first 45 minutes.
But you went
minutes.
To that. How
I
did
went
that
to
go?
It was the same presentation, so I didn't miss anything.
Oh, that's right. They said they were
going
to do that.
So the city's actually considering three things. One is an affordable housing, 100% affordable housing overlay, which in my view is actually noxious as written, in that it basically says if you're a homeowner and you want to do a little extra tweak, you can't. But if somebody buys a house next door, if it's affordable housing, they can build four times as densely
as written,
you.
This is actually in a report?
It's a proposal, yeah.
Who did it?
It's
Where
within Envision
it?
Cambridge.
It's
also pretty
Envision.
Much the same one that the housing division people are pushing through the housing committee.
Wait, that's not the super inclusionary.
No, that was the second one.
Okay.
So again, already, by the way, the idea about the 100% affordable housing quadruple the density petition, somebody floated that on one of the neighborhood listservs and people went, what? We never heard about this.
Yeah, that's
which was then followed by the YIMBYs who said, how dare you? You must be an evil person. You're opposing
so this
housing,
is going to be interesting.
Which
when
is
it
totally not
out.
The point.
Yeah.
Right? It's about fair play, right? But the thing is, the second proposal they came up with was about what they were calling a super inclusionary.
So
right now, if you build a building of 10 units or more, you are subject to the inclusionary zoning, which is now 20% of the units must be affordable. No more density bonuses. It's just you got to do it. Okay? So now they're saying, fine. They got rid of the density bonus. And now they want to put them back by saying if you have not just 20%, but let's say 30% subsidized housing.
But you get the height.
Wren will give you extra density.
Density.
If you go 35%, we'll give you even more. You go a little bit more.
How
so there's a little stepping up.
I
forget exactly what the maximum is, but they'll incrementally step it up. Now, I have to say, if you put that proposal up alongside the 100% affordable one that just basically gives certain parties the right to do certain things and other parties not, which is totally unfair. The super inclusionary proposal is a legitimate incentive program that says, if you have a right to do something, we'll let you do a little more.
If you give us...
If you do a little
more. I think 40% was the max.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is, so that's a logical, sensible, discussable proposal.
But it doesn't mean they automatically can do it, does it?
No, it's an opt-in. So you're obliged to do 20% affordable.
No, but I mean, within... Can they build it like that in a neighborhood? That as long as it's zoned that way, they could do it.
As long as it's zoned
to
do it.
And nobody can object to it.
There's no proposal. You can still, if there are any special permits, then it would be a process.
Okay, all right.
One of the other noxious aspects of the so-called affordable housing overlay is that no objections are permitted.
Really?
It's non-negotiable.
Oh.
The developer can do it, and because we don't want to slow down the Lord's work here, the thing is we can't have some of those unruly neighbors questioning why, in fact, you're able to put a 40-unit building next to my whatever.
I don't think that's going to fly.
You know, the problem, I don't think it should fly.
I can't see the counselors voting for that.
But there are some who will because, hey, it's affordable housing, and don't you know it's a crisis? So, and it may be a crisis,
but the thing is that
there's right ways and wrong ways to address it. My view, the super inclusionary is a much smarter way to do it. There was a third proposal, which is not specific to affordable housing, but it was that since the city is trying to incentivize environmentally better buildings for the future, for resiliency, whatever, net zero, they said, so there's some proposal over the years to phase in various net zero requirements. So they say, if you jump the gun and do it a little faster, we'll give you a little extra bonus. You can build a little more building to do that. But again, it's incremental and it's opt-in. So it's a good thing, you know. Now, we can talk about the particulars, but of the three proposals, basically, there was one which was just nuts, and then two that actually had something that I think worth discussing. So, but we'll see how it goes. You know, honestly, my opinion of the city council is going to very much be shaped by
what happens. Housing committee meeting coming up in October that actually we can this go is, to. It's not on a Tuesday.
Yes. And this is on the agenda for that meeting.
Oh, it is. I'm definitely.
I mean, continuation of the idea about the affordable stuff, right? Anyway, plenty of other things. One thing, just sort of a little note in passing here on a resolution. I do look at the ones of people who've passed away, resolutions of people who've died, and people who've retired and whatever. There was one notable retirement, you know, for those of us who follow political, which was, Bill Dwyer from Public Works is retiring, you know, who's been there forever. And, you know, and people need to understand, Public Works is like a little family there. So maybe from the outside world, they might not take note of it all, but these are really significant things if you're at Public Works or if you've ever worked with Public Works. So it matters. The other thing is the retirement of David E. Sullivan, who was a city councilor for five terms.
Wow.
I think he didn't run in 1989, right? So, but he served right through 89. Mm. And he actually went out on the top. He was the top vote getter in his last election.
Wow, that's
right?
unusual.
Even besting the late great Walter Sullivan.
Wow.
So that was quite something. David Sullivan bests Walter Sullivan. I remember everybody was like, whoa, that's something.
That is funny.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a sort of a notable point in there. One thing that's Councillor Toomey exercised his charter right for most of the policy orders. For whatever reasons, I don't know. I don't care really.
Yeah, seriously.
I didn't feel like staying there anyway. But the thing is one thing is, I think we mentioned, was that the Santa Maria nursing facility out on Concord Avenue, almost at the Belmont
Line. There was an order about that, wasn't
there? There were two.
Yeah.
The thing is that they're closing down shop at the end of the year. And it's a pretty significant
jolt. They own their lot, they're trying to sell it, right?
And it's a pretty big lot. And it's very much an in or adjacent to the whole study area for the alewife stuff, you know, along Concord Avenue. So two proposals. One was Councilor Mallon's, who basically says we should create yet another overlay district out there for a senior living overlay district.
Oh, that's the third one.
Yeah. So now yeah. Listen, I think it would be wonderful if we continue to have seniors living there.
We have a lot of senior residences, don't we? We're pretty generous to seniors.
And there are actually a lot of people with money who are actually moving to Cambridge as a place to retire.
Yeah.
So, but the city's actually taken on projects of creating assisted living facilities for lower income people in the city as well. So, you know, we've got to take care of everybody, mm-hmm. right? You know, or accommodate people, whether they can afford it or not, right? So what's going to happen with Santa Maria? I mean, you know, should it just become high-end condos with the necessary 20% affordable, right? Mm-hmm. Should it be something else? The Alewife people were promoting, light industrial in there. I actually think for years people have talked about moving the public works yard. And
to Sancta Maria. It would have been better in the quadrangle.
Deeper, but the thing is, this is the part of the quadrangle.
Well,
it really is. It's within Cambridge. It's just north of Concord Avenue.
Let me think
between
about
that
and
the railroad track.
That's true. It's just beyond.
Right.
Right. But I,
so,
yeah. Okay.
So anyway, there's
Blanchard
a discussion
Road,
that
yeah.
has to take place and will take
Good point,
place about
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
But already, so Councillor Toomey and Kelly and somebody else has an order saying we should build nothing but affordable housing in the Sancta Maria site. Councilor Mallon says, no, it should be senior living, whatever, and
well,
who knows?
Well, it can be both.
It can
you
be both,
could have senior
right.
living, and it could be yeah. like a continuum community with some spots for people.
But it'll be something, and,
yeah.
and the thing is that, you know...
But
and
you got to get a developer interested in it that's going to do it, otherwise
well,
you're going to sell to the highest bidder, no?
Right, in other words, the owners of the Sancta Maria facility
yeah.
will...
if they need to
they'll
make
find
money,
a buyer, they'll make money.
Just like Leslie bought
that's
the
it.
Episcopal.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So anyway,
we're ending on a note of you need money.
We need money, yeah. So, and and council, I'm sure Councilor Ellen Devine will once again file to bring back the Brown petition, but not this week.
All right. We'll
see you
next
week.
Bye.